Hi everyone, I'm Sarah from the Squiggly Careers podcast, and this is an extended episode of our You Coach You live event in Manchester. We really wanted to be able to share these extended episodes because there were so many good ideas for action, wisdom, and just really interesting insights from our guests that we wanted to give you the opportunity to spend a bit more time with them. And so at our Manchester event, we had two guests. We had Lee Chambers, who is a psychologist and wellbeing expert, and who has also personally had a lot of adversity to find his way through, that he is very open and very vulnerable in terms of the sharing about those things so that we can all learn from them. And we also had Drew Povey, who is a leadership expert, and some of you might also recognise his voice from Educating Manchester, if any of you watched that show. And he's had a really squiggly career and developed in so many different directions. They were both a real joy to spend time on stage with, and we hope that their different ideas and the things that they're going to share with you will also feel really useful when you listen to them. We go through each of the chapters of You Coach You, each of the core topics. So we start off by talking about resilience and how you can invest in your resilience reserves. We then talk about time, how to make time trade-offs, how to spend time on the things that matter most to you, how to build your self-belief, and how to also make sure you've got the right support network around you, because we know that nobody succeeds by themselves. We then talk about exploring your progression possibilities. So particularly Drew talks here a bit about, he's done so many different and interesting things. How do you navigate your way through those squiggles? Some of those that perhaps you had anticipated and some that sort of are opportunities that come your way. And then finally, we finish by talking about purpose. So what does purpose mean to Drew and Lee? How do they do work that feels meaningful for them? And how have they connected the dots throughout their career to do work that feels really purposeful for them? So I hope you enjoy today's extended episode, and I'll be back at the end just to say bye. Thank you. Welcome both. Welcome to the Lowry, to the beautiful Lowry, and the Squiggly Careers podcast and You Coach You Live. Delighted to have you both here. So we thought we would stick with resilience to get us started and also to help us to get to know you both a little bit. And Helen started tonight by talking about these ideas of knotty moments. And it's always worth reminding ourselves, I think, that however shiny someone looks on the surface, I promise you, no one has a straight line to success. Everybody has knotty moments. Everyone has these really tough times. So we're actually going to ask you to be to tell us some tough stuff as our way to get to know you both. So maybe share something that has felt quite knotty for you, Lee, so far in your career, but also what helped you to be resilient during that time.
Yeah, so I think a big one for me was losing the ability to walk. And at the time, I was running a European video game company, so I was here, there, and everywhere, running at 100 miles an hour, and then suddenly, I literally stopped. And a big thing for me in that period was it was very challenging. I had two young children at the time, and I had to really start to think about the small things. I had a lot of time to reflect. And I suppose what that really did for me in a lot of ways was give me the space to actually see that every step I took on that year to recover was a small win. The lampposts became like big trophies. And a lot of those elements around resilience, I actually had to find ways to not suppress my emotions, because I did feel, you know, some despair, some grief for losing the ability to walk. But I found ways to express that. And I actually realized that resilience was quite creative, a way to actually express myself to other people, to talk and to share and to ask for help, which sometimes as a young man who wanted to take on the world and do everything, it was quite an eye-opening experience that so many people are there to support you. And as I got back onto my feet, it actually caused me to squiggle in a big way. I went back into what I originally studied. And after 12 years of studying and completing a degree, I actually then went back in and started that career. And sometimes the resilience from the journey, from the twists and the turns, from the times where you redirect and sidestep, actually really offer you a way to stop, to pause, and to see where you want to push and progress for the next bit of momentum that you generate. And for me, obviously, that was quite a knotty time. And I suppose as I undid that knot, I actually found a lot of little lessons and little treasures, things about me that I didn't know, that as I unpicked that knot, I actually started to see that there's probably more I could do. And it really started to help me see how I could, you know, take on a different journey, really thinking and taking my kids by my side.
And I do remember reading in an article you said you'd set yourself the goal to try and relearn to walk before your, was it your daughter or your son?
It was.
And so, who won? I have to ask.
So I actually managed to get back on my feet so I could take my first steps with her. And her pram had been a massive walking aid on that journey. As you know, she looked up at me as I tried to get a few more steps in. But it's the only thing I think I've ever won against her, because she runs rings and beats me on a daily basis.
Thank you for sharing that, Lee. That's lovely. Drew, what about yourself?
That's, first of all, that is a great story, isn't it? It was like incredible. I've got a graveyard of things behind me in terms of learning. I'd probably pick one of the biggest learning curves for me was the way I left the school. You know, it was quite public. We allowed them with the family. We talked about it to film the whole, you know, issue, and it was really difficult. You know, it was tough.
In context for this, because I guess people wouldn't know that you're probably, because we introduced you as a leadership expert, and people might not know about your life as a teacher.
People aware of the work I did in education, educating Greater Manchester. If not, Google it. if you're struggling to sleep, that'll definitely get you off some of the articles there. But it was a really difficult time. So we did a TV series, and there was lots and toing and froing, and you can make your own mind up as which side you take on it. But it was a really difficult moment. You know, it really is. And I think for me, because it was so public, and we had the TV cameras on the lawn and the Daily Mail, you know, there on the lawn, and I couldn't say anything at the time about what was going on. It probably wasn't as much for me as it was for the family watching, you know, my wife and my three boys go through it. You know, my wife made her quite ill. My youngest son and my middle son, they were crying, not wanting to go to school. The oldest one was 15, and he was like, "I'm going to school, Dad, and anyone says anything to me, I'll knock him out." I was like, "That's not helpful, Tom," in the grand scheme of things. But it was a tough time. And what I like about your book, there's so many things I like about the book, and I wouldn't say that just because I'm on the stage with you. It is a really good book. There's so many good things in there, but I love the fact that we're not saying resilience is just this bounce back ability that Dowie talked about. It's more than that. And I worry in the world of motivation and inspiration, it's just like, you've got a bad moment, you're down, just get back. Yeah. You know, Chumbawamba wrote a song, didn't they? Get knocked down, get back up again. And it's more than that, because that's not resilience, because if we think that's what resilience is, we're probably going to run headlong into the same issues again. We're going to be running into, so that's not resilience, that for me is stupidity. So I think the biggest issue, and I think Lee's just talked about it there, it's the learning that we take from it. It's, for me, the hidden gem in resilience is curiosity. We've got to get curious about what put me in that position. What can I take from that? What can I learn? You know, it's the learning bit for me that comes. Then it's about unlearning some things, some of those potholes and pitfalls that are gonna keep me in those three P's you talk about in the book, the Martin Seligman's, the personalization, pervasiveness, and the permanence. You know, this too shall pass. Not allowing yourself to get stuck, and then relearn better ways of doing things. You know, don't, the Winston Churchill stuff, you know, don't let a good crisis go to waste. And you've got to use whatever comes your way, including the pandemic. The last 2 years, we've all learned, haven't we? So much. You've got to grab hold of that and go, did I want this to happen? No. But while I'm here, well, I may as well take something from it and come back. So I don't think it's about just bouncing back. I think it's getting back up. But for me, it's about getting back up smarter. And if we can do that, well, we might not have liked it, but I suppose we made the best of a bad job.
So we designed the book around the most common career challenges that people came to us for help with, and resilience being one of them. The second chapter of the book is all around time. We have so many people that come to us and they feel like either they're not using their time well, or they don't know how to prioritise, or, you know, we talk about this concept of work-life fit. And so I wanted to talk, Drew, maybe get your perspective on what does time well spent mean to you? Because we found that quite a useful thing to reflect on. And depending on what it means to you, how do you make sure that is how you're spending your time?
So I was watching something on TikTok the other day. My son's got me
very
onto
cool.
TikTok. Well, I pretend to be. I'm an embarrassment to my three boys, of course, as all parents, I think, are. I'm at that stage where, you know, they walk 10 feet in front of you or 10 feet behind you and you get dropped off around the corner, you know, when you're dropping off. I watched something on TikTok, though, and it was a really, really good article, and it's just sprung in my mind, actually, as you've just said that. And it says, you know, we have an alarm on our cars because we don't want it to get stolen. We have alarms on our house because we don't want to get broken into, but we don't protect our time in the same way. And we should, and it's really important. It really made me think, do I protect my time? Because I was once asked one of my greatest failings on a podcast. I don't know why I get asked that question a lot. It must be something about my career, I think. But I do... I remember saying, I think my greatest issue is I get very excited very quickly and I want to help people and I want to kind of go down that track of, come on, we can go and do this. And I say yes a lot. And when you say yes, obviously you're saying no to a whole host of other things. So it's making sure your diary reflects your priorities, which is quite a scary thing for all of us sometimes. You know, what's the most important thing in your life? Oh, it's my wife and three boys. Shows your diary, because it doesn't look like that on paper. And that, for me, is a big challenge, and it's a constant one. And I think the other one on time is a great quote from Tony Schwartz when he says, manage your energy, not your time. And for me, that was one of those moments where, you know, we've got a lot of time, and I get that, but, you know, I'm quite high energy and I want to do a good job. And I've got to manage my energy first, I think, before my time. So I do really carefully, you know, plan my time as much as I can. And I'm trying to say yes to the right things. But at the same time, I'm looking at my energy in for things. So, for example, having this event tonight, I needed some time off this afternoon to kind of re-energize, and a couple of espressos that you kindly got me as well. So I think that's what I'd say to it. Let's guard our time. Be careful what you're saying yes to. But for me, it's probably more energy as opposed to time that I think is the biggest difference maker for me.
Thank you. It reminds me as well, when I was at Microsoft, we had a team activity where everyone talked about what gave them energy and what took their energy away. And it's a really useful conversation to have as a team, to get that level of insight about each other, but also to be able to support each other when you know those moments that might happen in the week. You can be quite proactive about how you support the team, so the team is energised as well.
Yeah, I love that.
So, Lee, we wanted to talk a bit about self-belief. So in Squiggly Career, we talk about confidence and this idea of confidence gremlins, those beliefs we have about ourselves that hold us back. And we've got self-belief in You Coach You because we sort of wanted to keep going with confidence, keep thinking about why is it such a barrier, some of those barriers, some of those beliefs, I think, are so tightly held. The more I researched about beliefs, the more I realised just how hard they are to challenge. So where we have negative beliefs about ourselves, they almost feel like scaffolding. I think there's somebody brilliant who describes them as like they're the mental architecture for how we see the world. They really are sticky, these unhelpful beliefs that we have about ourselves. And so often I hear people in our workshops or in the work that we do say, you know, I don't think I can do this, or people still talk about imposter syndrome. There's a lot of things, you know, caught up in this idea of belief and self-belief. And you've started your own businesses multiple times, which I think takes a lot of self-belief. Like we know that, you know, I spent most of my time in big companies and that was easier at times, definitely. So what has really helped you with all the kind of squiggles in your career and the different choices to kind of build your self-belief, and particularly where you felt like maybe your self-belief wasn't where you wanted it to be, but you've been able to be brave sort of anyway? Because I think we all have these doubts, don't we? I think it's Susan David who says we should just use our doubts as data rather than ignore or avoid them, which I find really helpful. So don't sort of try and turn off those doubts, but we've got to try and use them in a useful way. So I'd just be interested to know, like, how do you keep going with your self-belief? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so I think for a lot of people, they see you're a psychologist and then they think, oh, you've got your mind sorted.
haven't?
I'll tell you, I mean, to be honest, we're human. At the end of the day, those same doubts creep in. We still have those two people in our minds, like lawyers, one arguing for you, one arguing against
you. The old critic and the coach.
And, at the end of the day, where you put your attention over time starts to actually pay that lawyer a little bit more. For me, to be honest, every time I started something new, I've been in that position where I felt like a beginner, but I've kind of decided to almost put my lab coat on as a scientist and think, this is an experiment. There's a good chance it's going to go wrong, but actually, I'm just gathering data. for every time it doesn't go exactly as I planned, it gives me an opportunity to see, okay, so it didn't go as planned, but what can I take from it? What shouldn't I do again? Because there's always times when, like Drew said, you've seen something, you've done something, it didn't go right, and there's quite clear signs there to say, don't endure doing that again. Don't do it over and over again. But in every experiment that you make, every experiment that you take, there are lessons to be taken to be applied in the future, and there's a little bit of treasure, just like in every oyster, that gets irritated and then creates a pearl. And for me, I've been on a number of different careers and started a number of different things, but for me, that belief, it comes from starting to actually understand yourself, because every twist and turn that you take opens up a new horizon, but you never forget the journey from the pathway behind you. And every time you scale an obstacle, you actually have the chance to just take a moment to turn around, celebrate that you've climbed it, but then see and consider how you might dismantle it for somebody else. And that feels really empowering when you get to the next obstacle, because there might actually be someone just on the other side who can potentially give you some encouragement as you start to scale that next journey.
Yeah, and I love that. I love that perspective of seeing almost like your career choices as a series of experiments, whether it's your choices or your decisions or things you're trying out. And Margaret Heffernan does some really brilliant work on experiments and just how important they are in organisations and for individuals to have a more curious and kind of exploring mindset. It's how we realise we can do more than we give ourselves credit for, which I'm convinced we can all do more than we give ourselves credit for. If we can sometimes just maybe see it as an experiment, maybe give ourselves permission to try in a way where we don't sort of put ourselves on a really unrealistic pedestal.
Yeah, I would say everyone in this room has hidden skill sets they've not even really kind of dusted off and exposed yet. And I think that sometimes it requires other people to help you see those and start to bring those into what you do today. Because more than ever, we live in a world where the skills in this room could change the world. And that's how I keep going, doing different things. Because for me, it's a journey. And going through the adversity that I've gone through has really helped me to shape me, believe that more than ever, we have so much inside of us. And this book helps us to actually coach some of those elements out and actually starts to give us the ability to understand that there are more things that you can unlock and there are elements of your journey that you've not actually delved into yet. And when we look a bit later at purpose, we'll start to consider how we can dust those off and actually see there's a lot of underlying threads in the journey that we've been on.
So actually, I'd like to ask the next question for both of you, because we then have a chapter about relationships. And the story behind that chapter is Helen and I nearly fell out over that chapter. And I said to her, I was like, it's too ironic. You can't fall out over a chapter on relationships. Imagine, like this can't be the thing that like means that we can't get this book to be finished.
I feel like you can't say that without explaining it. It's basically sort of, we had to write the book without seeing each other on anything other than Zoom. And so what would happen, so Sarah, I work in the morning generally, really before we like start the day, and Sarah work in the evening. So I would write something, email it to Sarah and be like, oh, I've done a great job on that chapter. And then Sarah would work on it at night and come back and she'd change like 75% of it. And I'd be like, hang on. And then I'd change it back, 50% of it back, send it back to Sarah.
When you say change, you mean improve or...
Some of it I changed back. I was like, no, that's coming back in. And then basically we did this to and fro-ing quite a bit until there was like a meltdown moment.
I woke up one morning, I reckon, to... We get on relatively well most of the time, but I woke up one morning to 10 WhatsApps, which had been sent at about 5:30 in the morning, and I just looked at them and went... Helen's having a real meltdown and it's only like 5 to 7 and I am really not a morning person. And I was just like, probably need to chat about this, to be honest. Probably feels like we can't resolve this over WhatsApp. But I promise.
The chapter's better because of that moment.
The chapter is better because of it. Because we were like, right, we have got to make this chapter even better. So we spent a lot of time in our relationship chapter. And our own relationship, I think, is stronger as a result.
I think so too.
We just keep telling ourselves that.
There's a reason we're not sat together, though, obviously.
Yeah, we sort of keep it distant.
You can feel the tension across the stage. Yeah.
It's an ladies, unresolved issue. Yeah.
Book three. And then, so one of the things I do really think about is the relationships, more and more actually, the relationships throughout our career that we build are something that belong to us and that we need to invest in. And I actually sometimes get a bit concerned that we spend too much time maybe in more transactional relationships to help us get the day job done, but we don't want to neglect building those relationships that are sort of beyond the day job, where we're just sort of exploring and being curious and just spending time with people we can learn from and learn with in a less maybe this is very related to a task on my to-do list way. And I'd love to hear from both of you, just someone who's been really important to you as part of your career.
In terms of career or personal?
Well, I guess it could be someone personal who's really supported you in your career. But maybe yeah. It's interesting to see where your head goes first in response
to
the question.
I would say I think they've probably crossed over both. So I've had a really, really great mentor who just like came into the office one day because they were lost. And then we got talking and he couldn't leave the office because I was talking. I'm not shy of a few words, as you probably noticed. And we just had this great conversation and it just went on. And he's been such a big supporter of me personally. He's been a big supporter professionally. He's been there through the difficult times. He's given me great advice when I'm not quite, because I do get very nervous for most things I do. You know, in the book, you talk about borrowing belief. You know, as an educator and someone who works a lot in sport, it's perfectly acceptable to borrow people's belief. And I agree with what you were saying earlier. No one, in my eyes, I've ever come across anyone that's actually reached their potential. Yeah, and I think having somebody like that is critical. And just as you were talking then, I was really reminded, I don't know if people have read a book by James Eblen called Overworked and Overwhelmed, but I was really shocked at the importance of personal relationships on our health. You know, having weak personal relationships outside of work, which I was really surprised by this and didn't believe it, so I did check it up, and there's lots of studies done on it, is as bad for you as smoking 20 cigarettes a day, or as bad as being an alcoholic. And I was thinking, wow, that's the power of personal relationships. Now, what it doesn't mean is you can smoke 20 a day and have loads of mates, or drink loads and have loads of mates. But I think that, for me, is the power outside of work. I think we get it very often, the importance of network. I think we kind of understand that. But the personal stuff, that really makes a big difference. And that's sometimes when we get busy in life, we can forget the power of personal relationships, and we shouldn't do that. But I would say, yeah, a great mentor. I was on the phone to him today. He's actually got kidney stones at the moment, so he's in absolute agony. But he's had some painkillers, so we had a great chat.
And what was he looking for? What was he looking for? You know, he found you. What was he at? What
did his pen.
Oh.
someone had nicked his pen and he thought it was me. And I went, it's not me, I can assure you. But then we talked about rugby and
I hope you bought him a pen at some point just to like signify the importance of
it. He loses it anyway. There's no point. He'll just leave it somewhere else. But it was his pen, yeah.
And Lee, how about you? Someone who's been really important for you from a relationship perspective.
Yeah, so I think probably from a slightly different angle. My first manager when I worked in local government. Now, I used to get pretty frustrated. I was not really well fitted to local government, being quite a disruptive character, always thinking outside the box, wanting to spend all the money. and ultimately, what she did was, in a lot of ways, I felt triggered because I felt she was pushing against my belief set. Mm-hmm. But I only started to realise over time that what she was doing is nudging me in the right direction. She started to actually make me understand what leadership was actually about. She wasn't micromanaging me. She was gradually nudging my quite young and naive self towards shaping me and actually helping me to see that some of my own beliefs were going to limit me. Yeah. And it's so easy, especially when you start your career, to be quite hard-headed and, you know, not particularly open to different ways of doing things, because you're young, you're the next generation, you're going to go and come and, you know, evolute the world and turn the world of work into what you want it to be. But actually, that experience of being challenged on a daily basis and actually being triggered got me to a point where I started to ask questions. And I started to understand why she did it. Mm-hmm. And that opened up a whole new world for me of actually, if you start to be able to ask questions in a relationship, you can actually start to build a self-awareness of why other people behave, interact, and believe the things that they do. And that has made me a lot more self-aware, a lot less judgmental. And still today, I met her again, bumped back into her on that squiggly trail a few years ago. And, you know, we reminisced about the old times, but I thanked her for the impact she'd had on my young self in the workplace, because I might not have taken a few of the turns if it wasn't for her approach towards me.
I agree. When I look back on my career, I think my managers matter so much, both the brilliant ones and the not so brilliant ones, because I think they do. They help you to explore your potential. They see strengths that you can't see for yourself, but also they help you to realise what you don't want to do and what you don't want to be. And I can almost chart my squiggly career and sort of go, well, it definitely wouldn't have gone in the direction that it did if I didn't have some of those managers along the way.
Yeah, managers almost pivot you.
Yeah.
And you can either be repelled away from them, or they can pivot you towards them.
Yeah.
And the good ones are compelling and gradually turn you towards them without you replicating them, and allow you to then blaze your own trail.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'm incredibly grateful for.
Yeah, I think those best managers are always really clear. It's not about you being them, it's about you being the best version of you.
Yeah.
Which is always like one of my favourite leadership quotes from Why Should Anyone Be Led By You, which I always think is a great leadership question everyone should ask themselves. Why should anyone be led by you? Is they say, Rob Joffe and Gareth Jones say, the key to like brilliant leadership in all the research they've done is to be yourself more with skill. And I think once I think brilliant managers realise that's how you will be brilliant, if they can help you to be yourself more with skill rather than trying to be them. And the best managers I've worked for are really different to me, but they are so brilliant and I'll always be incredibly grateful for them.
We've also dragged two of our managers onto our podcast before, James and Sarah. And then we've got another event coming up in March, which has to be rescheduled from January. I reckon quite a lot of our managers are going to be in. They're all just going to manage. We'll have a manager corner.
At least four.
Have you got four? I think I've got three or four coming. Yeah, we just have a little manager corner.
These poor managers, we like don't let go of them. We're like limpets. We're like, you still want to be friends with us, right? They're like, not really, to be honest. It's like
you're
10
now
years.
Our mentors, right? I don't know if anyone's seen our TED Talk, but on our TED Talk, we talk about this research that shows that now in your career, well, you're likely to have like four or five different careers, so very different things you're doing, not just like a different number of jobs, but actually very distinct and different careers. And when I look at some of the things that you've done, Drew, I think you might be clocking up quite a few of those four or five different careers at the moment. So what do you think has helped you with your progression? Because it has been quite different. We're talking like an RE teacher, a leadership expert. You've done lots of things in sport as well. There's been quite a few different genres. How much of a plan has been in place for all of that? I can see a wry smile. And if there hasn't been a plan, I'm assuming there might not have been, but if there hasn't been a plan, what has connected those different careers that you've gone through?
It's a really good question, one of which, it was only when we've been talking about it, I've probably reflected on it, loads of different careers. To me, it doesn't seem like that. So it might do, you know, head teacher, working in sport, doing a lot of leadership, coaching, keynote speaking, helping shape organisational culture, loads of different things, and some weird ones, like I was a doorman.
I didn't know that.
I know, yeah. People like, where, at Mothercare? No. I was... what did you do, Drew? Like, talk them to death. Yeah, was the answer to that. I've had loads of different jobs. I was even a singer in a band with my brother. Like, yeah, I was terrible. He was good. He's a good musician. But like the Phoenix Nights Club, like all over the Northwest. So loads and loads of different things. I think a lot of it came about was, again, I don't, you know, we've all seen the graph, haven't we? And I love the squiggly term as well, because you've got like performance over time. Success is not linear. You know, it's ridiculous. One of the things I really disagreed with in schools about 10 years ago was, you know, these flight paths of progression for kids. Who learns like that? Life's not like that, is it? You know, we're all have ups, we have downs, we have, you know, so I think it's not linear. I think it was all by accident, not by design, but I really understood from a very early age of being a dysfunctional student myself at school with learning difficulties that they didn't pick up until I was 24. So I've got dyslexia, if any of you have seen the TV series where I talk about it with a student. But, you know, I went through the whole of school not knowing I had dyslexia until I was 24 in teacher training. I'm at a dyslexia seminar and it's kind of like, that sounds like me. Now I'm also familiar with medical school syndrome where, you know, you think you've got everything that you study in. So, you know, you've got like 27-year-old lads thinking they're going through the menopause or whatever. But I was kind of like, I was sitting in this going, oh, maybe I'm dyslexic, maybe I must be, or dyscalculia. Anyway, I've gone home and done these online tests, the old plug-in internet, and some people in the audience far too young to know what I'm talking about. It used to make this horrible noise, and I went on, and I was like tipping into extreme dyslexia. So I think there's been lots of different things that have happened to me in my life that have kind of shaped the fact that I understand it's the, you know, I'm the tortoise, not the hare, so I can outwork. So I think I've learned a lot of my personal strengths from those difficult moments, the learning stuff that I talked about earlier. But I think it all links to the fact that I always wanted to kind of help people develop. That's why I got into coaching very, very early, sports coaching, way before education, and then started to work in elite sport. It's about helping those athletes develop, and then it went into teaching, because at the end of it, I thought, well, I need a backup for sport, and I ended up becoming, my degree was in a bizarre degree, PE, sports science, theology, philosophy, and RE. All rolled into one, which is good for being a rugby playing monk or whatever, unique. Yeah. Only me in the world that's got a degree like that. But so I ended up becoming an RE teacher, PE was full. And again, for me, it didn't seem bizarre. You know, I'm doing sport, that's helping people develop. Well, I'll be a teacher and that'll be helping people develop. And then I'll write some leadership stuff because I think that'll help people develop. And I'll coach people because that'll help people develop. And I'll do some keynotes because that. So for me, it seemed to make sense. It was only when you were looking at me going, what exactly the hell do you do, man? Like, when we've had our conversation, I was going, well, it just makes sense to me. So I think that's probably what I'd say. It makes sense to me, but it was all by accident, not design. It just seems, things seem to feel right because of the skill set that I thought I had at the time.
And it's almost like it's become very purposeful for you now to do different things that can help people develop.
Yeah, everything's about that. So our business is not run, you know, commercially. I mean, there has to be a commercial side. We don't choose our work based on that. We work with the police. We work with Greater Manchester Cancer, the Christie. I'm on with them Thursday. We do work in elite sport. I'm working with the Welsh Rugby Union tomorrow, Hull KR Rugby League team, you know, working in football. But we choose the work based on impact. Can we help those people develop? We do it, regardless of the money. If we can't help them develop, then we'll probably not do that because it's not in our skill set, and I know, you know, where that is and where it's not.
Amazing journey. I think it's interesting as well, one of the sentences there I'll always remember is you said, you know, it might not make sense to other people, and I think we've got to let go of that. As long as it makes sense to you,
very good point.
I think then that's the most important thing, as long as it feels purposeful and meaningful for you. Sometimes I think when people have squiggly careers, they'll talk to me and say, oh, it feels like it does make sense to me, but it's hard to describe to other people, like why you've made some of those choices, or perhaps your CV doesn't look like a classic CV, and that we really want to, I think, move away from this idea of like, it should look like this, or everything should stack up in a certain way. So Lee, just continuing on the purpose, and the final chapter in the book is all about purpose. When I was writing that chapter in particular, I think my starting point as somebody who had worked in kind of a very purposeful job as looking after corporate responsibility was being so mindful of, there's lots of chat about purpose. And the last thing we wanted to do was do something that felt general or vague. And I think purpose can also feel, you could put yourself under quite a lot of pressure to feel, you know, does my career feel purposeful or meaningful enough? And I see that in some people who talk to me, but kind of go, well, where do I find this purpose and how do I get to being purposeful, to kind of what Drew was just describing? So what does that mean for you when you're thinking about having a purposeful career or having a meaningful career, or whatever word really works for you? What does that mean for you? What's your starting point?
Well, the starting point is never going to someone on Instagram who says, I'll help you find your purpose. Because we all know deep down that we kind of uncover it little by little, chiseling away, gradually starting to get a little bit more of a vision of what we are underneath the skin. And what we do, the starting point for me was always to reflect back on the journey that I've been on, to look at the things that I enjoyed and drill a bit deeper into why, but then also to flip that, the things I didn't enjoy in the workplace, the people I didn't enjoy working with, and really starting to dig a little bit deeper into why I didn't enjoy that scenario, why I didn't enjoy working in that position, why I didn't enjoy that atmosphere. And what I gradually found by asking myself those questions, it was really started to become more clear. There was an underlying thread across all the different careers that I'd had, whether I was working in corporate finance, elite sport, local government, video games, psychology. There was always an underlying thread, very similar to Drew's. I got a lot of fulfillment from empowering and enabling others to do more than they were currently doing. And for me, starting to see that no matter what business I was running, no matter what job I was in, it was always that pushed me on to be happy and fulfilled in the work that I was doing. And that didn't mean that I'd go to work bouncing and skipping in every morning. I'd like to pretend that I do that now. Some mornings I'm peeling myself up. My kids have been, running riot during the night. But more than ever, that purpose is gradually digging down to find those roots, the roots of you that have started to spread all the different skills on those roots. But you don't live as a tree on your own. You're in a forest. There's lots of other people's roots under there as well. They cross. You collaborate with more people than you generally believe. And your purpose can also be found through those collaborations with other people, as they will often have a vision of you that you don't always have of yourself. And just one thing that I suggest everyone do, once they've started to master some of the skills in You Coach You, you can then take it a step further and start supervising yourself as you coach yourself. And go into the third person and start to write your own scripts like you were writing a Coronation Street script. Because sometimes seeing yourself in third person, you actually start to see your purpose flowing as you navigate the world, almost like you're an actor in a soap opera.
Yeah, I think that is a brilliant suggestion. One of the things that we talk about is, be your own fly on the wall. Sometimes when you have distance from your own situation, you get a different kind of data. So being able to sort of imagine almost like yourself, people might not be old enough to remember Ally McBeal, but like the floating out and looking back down. For, there's like a certain generation who are like, yeah, Ally McBeal, and then other ones are like, no. But it's that idea of kind of what you're combining there, which is really nice, is at times within coaching, it's really useful to fast forward into the future. So just do a little bit of visualization, whether that looks like words or bullet points or mood boards, whatever works for you. And then I think that really helps you to then come back to the present and think, well, what does that mean for me right now? So we're sort of, I think with purpose, we want to get away from this idea. And Natalie talks about it in the book, who is brilliant. She sort of says, get away from the idea that someday, the clouds will clear. And you'll just discover it. And I think she says it's not going to hide it. You're not going to open a suitcase and it's just going to be there. I think we use this phrase kind of work in progress purpose. And I think when we let go of the pressure to feel like we're going to find it at some point and just start to ask ourselves some of the questions, look for those common threads and themes. What do you enjoy? But also, what do you really hate? What gets you really frustrated? Yeah. Who are you inspired by? Asking yourself these questions. I think just over time, and I think you're chiseling away is a really good way of describing it. I think you get closer. By chiseling, you get closer and closer. And actually, there's some really good evidence that when you're doing really purposeful work, if anything, you won't jump out of bed every day, because purposeful work will be hard at times. And for it to feel meaningful, there will be days where you're like, this is difficult, and I'd rather be doing something a bit easier.
Meaning generates stress.
Yeah.
Think about, for all of you who have children, it's stressful. Yeah. Oh boy, it's stressful, but it means an awful lot. And with that responsibility and deep meaning of being a parent, or in your position, no matter what you care for, whether it be your job, your parents, that has a lot of meaning, but it also carries a lot of stress. That stress will sometimes mean that you are, overwhelmed, you are up against it, but you do within you have that toolkit to be able to see the value in that.
And you can get fueled by that, can't you?
Yeah.
You can fight against something. I think sometimes there's a road to Damascus moment. I've got my purpose. I think sometimes we can learn also about what we're really hacked off about, and I worked in tough areas, and people say, oh, what do you expect from the kids from an area like this? Absolutely not. You're going to work extra hard. I think you can be powered by being pissed off,
yeah.
To be quite frank. I think that in itself is a really powerful indicator. And as Lee said there, that can sometimes take you to what you really, really care about. Mm. And it can help you uncover, this really matters to me. And I think it's not just the fluffy side of purpose that people talk about, or your ultimate why. It can be something that you're just so passionate about or even angry about.
Yeah. Well, when we reprint the book, we'll have a Drew Pover get powered by being pissed off. We'll add it to the purpose, the purpose chapter. It's a quote we are missing. So just want to do a big, big thank you to Lee and to Drew for sharing their thoughts with us tonight, and also hope that it has brought to life for you some of the different things that we cover in the book. Can we just do a big thank you to Lee and Drew?
Thank you.
So thank you so much for listening to today's Squiggly Careers podcast, our extended episode from Manchester. If you'd like another extended episode, you can listen to Helen's conversation with Adrienne Herbert and James Routledge, which was recorded in London without me because I had COVID, unfortunately, at that time. And Adrienne and James are both brilliant. James founded a company called Sanctus, all about mental health and helping us, everybody, to improve their mental health. And Adrienne, who some of you might listen to her Power Hour podcast, or you might have read her Power Hour book, is just a bundle of energy and ideas and action. So they're a great combination, and I really enjoyed listening to them, given I didn't have the opportunity to be there on the night. But that's everything for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back with you again soon. Bye for now.